Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today's episode is an interview with David Oftenbrink. Oh, I think it's David Oftenbrinka. He is from Germany, and his brilliant film, Dream Life, was at Film Invasion Los Angeles in 2019. In fact, it pulled in numerous awards at Film Invasion LA 2019, and it will forever be one of my favorite films, like of all time, not just that have been at the festival. And I'm super proud to say that this brilliant film, Dream Life, is part of the Amazon Prime TV series, Discover Indie Film. So if you go to Amazon Prime Video, search for Discover Indie Film, in Season 3, Episode 2, you see two wonderful films, Blowout and Dream Life. Honestly, you just have to see Dream Life to understand why I love it so much. Hopefully you will have watched it before you hear this interview, but either way, this interview is with one of my favorite filmmakers. I hope I'm saying his name right. And I should add one more caveat, which is I recorded this interview earlier this year. In fact, I recorded it February 5th, 2020 is when David Oftenbrinka and I managed to get onto, I believe, Zoom and have a good chat. It might have been FaceTime, could have been Zoom, either one. And I don't know if you know your timing, but soon after that, COVID hit and life got hard. I lost a very good friend to COVID. And then I lost my dad, and it's just been a crazy year, so it has taken me way too long to get this released. And I have to give a disclaimer. When David and I were talking, there was a delay, whether we were using Skype or FaceTime or whatever we used to talk from Los Angeles to Hamburg. There was a delay, and so we kind of talk over each other every now and then. Nothing we can do about it. But I'm glad it's finally out. I hope you enjoy the talk with David, and I hope you go to Amazon Prime Video and watch Dream Life, because Dream Life is just a stupendous film. All right, I'll stop setting up and let you hear from David.
I don't remember how old I was when I really started like getting into the visual medium, because in a way I was always like drawing and doing stuff and like creating scenes with Lego and making up like my own creative way of playing. So, and I was watching TV. So of course, like there's always like this connection with the visual medium. I never grew up in a time where there wasn't anything, you know. I had a Game Boy, I had a Super Nintendo, so like all this stuff just like influenced me in a way, in the kind that I was drawing and the stuff that I was doing, you know. And due to some circumstances, because my mother had like an internet provider in the time when the internet was just starting, I was like hanging out at her office and just playing like after school, playing on a computer. And figuring out how to use Photoshop and figuring out how to build websites and making like these little 8-bit games and all this stuff. So this developed over the years, and I had an internship in a multimedia company and started basically doing advertisement.
And was that in what we call, was that high school? Was that younger?
Yeah, it was basically like I was 14 when I had the internship. So it was just like because I was so interested in web designing myself, I wanted to like learn more about it. So I had the opportunity to just do it in the summer vacation and spend like 2 weeks there. Then after like 1 week, we extended it to 6 weeks because it just like it was working out. And it had something to do with like there was this new plugin at this this time that's called Macromedia Flash. That's like quite outdated by now, and I think like maybe some people don't. This animation tool that you could use on websites, you know, and then suddenly you could do animations. And there were like 4 people or 5 people in Hamburg that could do it, and I was one of them at the age of 14. So they used me a little bit to make like these animations and get like into this, you know, and be able to like produce stuff with this very brand new technique. And I was just very happy to play to PlayStation because I didn't have one. So this kind of extended, then I continued working there after school, and it kind of became like my 3 days a week job. So extending into web design and doing all of this stuff.
Right, so Flash animation, which, yeah, I remember when Flash animation was just dominant.
Oh yeah, it was everywhere.
Yeah, and then you went right from that.
You had the coolest websites. You had awards for the coolest web design.
Oh, you know what? I'll confess. I tried to learn Flash animation, but I was a little too old to pick it up in my spare time after work. But I had some animated shows in my head that I thought, wow, if I learned Flash, it'd be so cool.
Yeah, it was amazing. I remember they even had South Park and stuff in Flash.
Yeah, yeah.
Like they recreated stuff. Like all the episodes exactly in there.
Yeah, because it was just vector animation, right?
It was so simple. Easy. Like a child could do it, you know.
A child probably could do it better. All right, so
that's basically like how I got into advertising, how I got into like in the proximity of filmmaking and animation, of course. But like at that moment, I didn't realize that I was also like there was also a need to do films. You know, I realized that I think when I was 15 or 16, you know, but just like, oh, I remember when I realized that there was this moment, like I was at a party and it was like the beginning of a TV station and they played the first movie of the TV station in the cinema. It was Pulp Fiction. And I was 11 and I was sitting there and my mom was just like, yeah, watch the movie. It's going to be okay. And I watched Pulp Fiction and it blew my mind. And it was like, you can do this. What? This is a film. I mean, like, for an 11-year-old, it was quite an impression that left on me.
Yeah, so I think maybe, from then not, on, I maybe not a film your mom would have wanted you to see at 11, but it had a great effect.
Very influential film in a way, yeah. Very effective to make you love cinema in a way, you know?
Definitely. But and then years, and that was 3 years before you, because I was about to say that as an animator is a filmmaker. And coincidentally,
I mean, Spielberg said that every director should be an animator before he gets into directing, so he knows exactly how many frames he needs of injection. Yeah. You know,
I mean,
and you become very precise if you do it like this. You know, yeah, like I learned how long a frame is from doing this. You know, and what like
you
a frame
about
rate.
Storyboarding.
Is.
I mean, it is storyboarding.
Yeah, exactly.
Which actually explains. We're not going to talk about Dream Life right away, but that explains a lot of what I see in Dream Life and find so impressive is how well visually designed it is. And obviously with an animation background, that's pretty natural.
Yeah.
But so
I mean,
14,
in fact,
15,
that
you're animating, and then is there another step that comes along?
I think there's the beginning of filmmaking, isn't there?
Yeah, well, and advertising. So you start doing a lot of work in advertising.
Yeah, I mean, I was working as an art director. I was doing multimedia, basically, in classic advertisement. So I was producing films from the agency side, you know, coming up with the concepts, finding, like, the production companies, finding the directors, and also doing, like, the post-production process, that's involved with it, like first supervising it, but sometimes also like getting into it and doing like animation, doing part of these. Like I was good at Photoshop, so naturally it became an extension into After Effects and just like doing this on a timeline now and just like making effects, making beauty retouches, making like all of these visual worlds basically for either websites or commercials, you know?
Yeah, that's talk about an incredible experience and such great training to have behind you.
Yeah.
I mean, every commercial is another film project.
What do you mean? Sorry.
I mean, every commercial you end up on, you're making a short film in a way.
Yeah. It's a lot of experience that you can gather doing it in a way.
And so you became an After Effects, and you became a bit of an expert at After Effects then.
Yeah, I mean, that was basically coincidental because in the beginning we really fucked up one project and we lost the budget on wasting it on something else and just like shooting the film and everything. So we didn't have the budget anymore to do the post-production. And after doing my very first film, like I did my first film in high school with friends of mine, because like the parents of a friend of mine were actors. So we made this 45-minute film, just shot like on my own camera. And I had a sponsorship by Adobe because I asked them like, okay, can I, I'm too poor to buy your product suite, you know? So either I crack it, but I don't want to do this. So can you please sponsor this film? And they gave me like the whole production suite, which was like really, really nice of them. And I'm still thankful for that. But I still had like this license for After Effects, which I never used. So this is basically like how I went into that, by accident, let's say, like just like trying to fix a project that was broken. And after a while, I got like the expert in this. So this was like, I think for almost 10 years or something, this was basically my job. Like I was an art director on one side, and then I was like a post-production supervisor slash compositor on the other. So before I even like, I always wanted to direct, of course, you know, I made my first film when I was 18. I tried something again when I was 24, when I made this 5-minute film. But then like for many years, I just like got lost in work basically, you know, and like tried to make enough money and gain enough experience to make like the really first film. So, yeah.
So the film, so you named those first two, and those aren't films. So you did make a film in your 20s.
I made a film, my first film I made when I was 18.
18, yeah. That was the 45-minute?
That was the 45-minute one.
And then you said at 24 you made a 5-minute on the side while you were working?
Yeah, basically, like, I was already freelancing at that time. So I took the time, basically, I quit my first job after a couple of years because I wanted to get deeper into filmmaking. And I made this adaptation of, I don't know if you know Astrid Lindgren, she's like this Swedish children's book author. So she told this very nice short story, and I got the rights to adapt it from her family. And I made this short film that's like a little bit like Lasse Hallström did, like the children from Bodaby, like these Scandinavian children's films in a way, you know, like just, it was the time of like, I never went to film school in a way, you know, I went from this advertising background straight into like doing this and trying it and like figuring out with like working with music video people and just like joining productions in a way. So this was kind of like my way of finding the style, you know, like it was a topic that interested me, but still like a time when I was copying other directors, let's say it like this, when I was trying to do it like Lasse Hallström would do it, you know.
Sure, which I think is very natural. Everyone's early work is a bit more inspired by other work than just their own originality out of nowhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, so you did,
and it's a very good practice, you know, just like to figure out like how would someone else did, whose films I like, how would they do it, you know, like what would they insinuate there, how would they see it?
I think that's the case with all artists, whether it's painters or, you know, I've heard so many stand-up comedians say that, you know, I started off just imitating Richard Pryor, and then after 5 years I had my own voice just by sticking with it.
Yeah, exactly.
So you were developing your own voice in a way.
Yeah. But I got stuck in working like for commercial projects and editing something else. And like I wrote some things, but never really got like into this. Okay, this is 100% the feature film that I have to do, because it was always convenient to just like take the next advertisement job. You know what I mean? Like they're short. I'm a very impatient person. So I can just like be satisfied after 4 weeks of working on something, you know, and I got a finished project.
Right. And you would sit down. So you would sit down and write off and on just the whole time, right?
Like just... not the whole time. Like mostly I was doing like, first I was doing the commercial post-production.
Yeah.
And like different kinds of effects. And then like when I had an idea, I was writing, and I was always like, I had in mind to always make like the big feature film. But the first one that I tried when I was 24, I think it failed. And I kind of lost hope at that moment, you know. It was like, oh, I'm going to practice a little bit more, you know. Maybe it's just like really not good enough, which of course at 24 it hardly can be, you know, except if you're Harmony Korine and just like put it out like this, you know, and say like written by the world famous whatever, you know. Like, but I wasn't like that, you know. I was very considerate. I was too thoughtful of this, and yeah, never really getting along with like creating my own work. It was easier, like I said, just to like take the brief at that moment, you know.
And, yeah, well, see and clearly,
and make 30 seconds for it.
Yeah, and I mean, in your defense, I mean that work—that's really interesting work that you were doing. I mean,
thank you very much.
I bet most of the filmmakers I know would love to be able to freelance as an art director and post-production and this and that. You know, that's cool stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So is the idea
amazing,
of Dream
but
Life...
you shouldn't see some of the projects that I had to do, you know? I mean, I made commercials for Cialis with 80-year-olds making out and stuff. So it was funny. It was experiences, you know? You really learn to direct from this.
Absolutely, you definitely.
Not everything is something that I was proud of, you know? That's a little bit what I mean, you know? I always had this dream in mind, but I never really dared to go there, you know? There was, like, always something that was, like, a little bit more convenient and just, like, taking the next 2 months, and then I could do it. And out of this, I will do it in 2 months became quite a lot of years, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so is Dream Life the next step? Is there a moment where you knew you wanted to make it, or was it was inspired by the actual travel?
Oh, it was interesting because, like, over the years, I really went into directing, you know, and then I had, like, these first breakthrough ideas for music videos that really put me on the market and really, like, gave me the lucky opportunity to work with very talented and very creative people and create something new. But mostly it was like adapting ideas that I had in my free time, you know? And I always like had this concept art that I would send them, and they said like, yeah, exactly like this, let's make the video like this. But it was always something that I created when I was in my free time. So.
And you were directing music videos as well then?
Yeah, exactly. I was doing commercials. I was doing music videos after a while, you know, like, which put me more on the market for commercials again. So it was like in the beginning, of course, like as a director, like when I really like took the step to go into directing, I realized I can't continue the old line of work that I do, because if I do, I will never be available if someone asks me. So I basically have to quit my old job and just start like shooting something for my reel, shoot on spec, just to build a reel at first, you know, build something that I can show to production companies so they would even start to work with me. And so this took like 2-3 years. Then I went into this music video thing. And I think after like 2 really successful videos that like I was... like, this was the most creative shit that was on the market yet, you know, like, for this year we made it, you know, we had like 40 million views on one video in Germany. And I realized afterwards that was like a really lucky punch, and there was so much enthusiasm while I was doing it, and I was so like on fire, you know, like for 3 months I hardly slept, you know, because I wanted to make this video, and I wanted to make like this kind of animation and this kind of little thing, and like being like overflowing with creativity, and suddenly it was gone. And I reached this point where it was just like, I wouldn't call it a burnout, because I wasn't really burned out, but I wasn't creative anymore, you know? I didn't know like the next idea.
Right. When that video was completed.
Yeah, basically like half a year afterwards, but let's say like I realized I can't reach this kind of success again, you know, like now I reached this kind of peak of doing something like really amazing, that like now it's the first time that someone did it, but I can't do this again, you know. And that really put me into this question for myself, like, where does creativity come from? Like, is it that now? Like, was that maybe like all my good ideas and now I'm just like drained and it's gone? Because for the moment it felt like it. I was just like really not feeling good anymore, you know, and like becoming winter depressed and all this stuff. So like me and my friends, we were talking about this idea of just like moving away for the winter and just like taking some time off, just traveling, you know, and like being in the sunlight, discovering the life that we want in that moment, you know, like just living day to day.
Right. So you moved to Thailand for the winter.
Yeah, exactly. We basically like we made this plan of moving to Thailand for the winter. But of course, like once I took the moment to think about what I want to do, I thought about like, okay, I really want to make a film, you know. This was like the idea that came back on my mind. So like before moving, I thought all of these different concepts that I could shoot together with my friends and make them work as actors, you know, and just like make kind of a travel documentary of our travels, how we rediscover ourselves from going away. There were some tragic things happening. So like this promised to be a good film, you know, but I realized it can't really be a documentary because it's too personal. And also like my friends really didn't want to star in a film, you know, they're not like the actor types. They didn't want to be like surveilled the entire time they go on vacation.
Yeah, which is so, in the film. So you actually, because you're a creative person, when you were planning this trip, you couldn't help but have the germ of just the idea to create something out of it.
I really wanted to shoot a film from this trip. But after a while of realizing, like, none of my friends will act in it,
Well, you show one of them with the, you know, with the, I can't remember if it was square
with the censored, mask in me.
Yeah, where he turns you and says, I'm on vacation, leave me alone.
Yeah, exactly. And like, they all play, like, a small part in this film, but, like, of not playing part in this film. I'm spoiling something now. I hope everyone has seen the film. That basically, like, I came into this pit of, like, going to Thailand, having, like, 4 months off, really wanting to shoot something and really wanting to make, like, a good short film because, like, a friend of mine told me, like, if you don't start, like, shooting, like, real films now, when will you start it? You know, you will get lost in this circle of just like shooting commercials and making money, but like, where's the art for you? You know, like, where's your expression? So I thought about this so hard and I came up with like different kind of concepts, but none of them would work. So in the end, I thought, okay, the only thing that I can really do is like put myself in there as an actor, you know, and do something with me and my voice and like the things that I have.
And you decided to create a work of a fiction using yourself that way.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
you didn't have the script in mind yet. It sort of grew organically out of your situation.
Yeah, like let's say it like this. I wanted to make like I had 4 or 5 different concepts for a film you could shoot on a travel, and in the end, none of them, I had like this feeling, none of them was like 100% and none of them was like really what I wanted to do and what I wanted to say. So one night I was sitting there and really like wondering of, okay, what the fuck am I doing here? Why am I making films? And what could I make a film about that is like something that I could really express, that I really know about? And suddenly I realized this is kind of an interesting situation that I'm in, that I'm like always in this kind of depression, that I'm always like, you know, I was in a kind of quarter life crisis after all this, like starting early in advertisement and not really knowing what I was doing. So I wanted to make a topic out of this and suddenly it was there and I realized like I'm the subject of my topic, you know, I'm like just in the middle of it and I can write like the screenplay about myself. And after that moment, basically it wrote itself, you know, just like starting from me waking up at night and having like all these thoughts, you know, and sitting on my sofa, which I was writing, sitting on the sofa. So it was a little bit like this Charlie Kaufman-esque situation that was developing there, like writing at night about myself, writing at night. And so, yeah, but that was when the idea was born. And basically a week before I flew to Thailand, I got like all the equipment and I got two friends of mine, my DOP from Hamburg and another friend who's like co-directing with me, but also like a DOP, and he was focus pulling. And we were getting like all the equipment I could carry and just like shooting the beginning of the film that I was writing during that night in my apartment, because it was like the location was for free, of course. It was like the authentic location that we had. And I kind of wanted, you know, I knew that like this film would be very improvised and I wouldn't know what I was doing later. So at least I was taking like this tip from Christopher Nolan to start your film in a very good set with a very good sound to be very controllable. So at least people don't walk out in the first 5 minutes, you know? So this was basically the idea why I wanted to start in Hamburg and not just like do something in Thailand, because I knew then it would just like be like any other traveling film.
You know, this is all explaining why it's so good, because there's something so natural, but also there's so many ideas in it. I was realizing when I watched it this morning that the number of ideas that resonate for me that your character is going through from the waking up, you know, the stuff you described, waking up and sitting on his computer, and it's just so dense with deep thoughts that I understand how you came about that. But even more brave about it is that you didn't have the whole idea when you began. You just began.
Yeah, basically had the first 5 minutes until I leave the apartment.
And interesting,
and
by the
really
way,
know how I to continue it. I didn't really know what I was going to shoot or what was the next scene was going to be once I was in Thailand. I was just like going to figure out on the way. But that was part of the concept, you know, by that moment, it kind of like all of this stuff of like concentrating on what I'm not doing for this film, it kind of developed into this concept of accepting failures and like always improvising your way through it, you know. And for example, the cartoon, like the beginning of the film is this cartoon sequence. And this all came from like, I was writing this scene that I thought like, okay, I can do the special effects for this. But if I was going to shoot this, it must be like 20,000 euros and a day of work for like at least 10, 20 people. So I cannot do it. Like the premise of this film should be like, I'm doing this with the limited things that I have on my vacation, you know, like now I'm even acting in my own film, you know, like, so at least like this thinking of like, and there's always a solution was like getting part of it. And so the first thing to like, instead of shooting this scene, I was coming up with doing it as a cartoon, which allowed me to be like very free and very creative in the way that I was expressing certain thoughts, you know. Suddenly I could create like my own reality and I could fly and just like hover down to earth and all of this stuff, you know, like every effect was possible just by Google image searching an element and placing it in there and animating it.
Yeah, because you had developed these skills over your career.
Yeah, but I'm not a really good cartoon artist, you know. That's really like the negative side that I ran into, you know. So there was this limitation again that I realized I can't do the cartoon animations myself. So I came up with this idea of just shooting myself with a camera in front of a white wall in the living room and doing like all this stuff. Like I was, instead of a flag, I was putting a broomstick into the ground and all of these ideas, just to like be able to trace the picture and then like make the animation from the actual film, because I can trace the picture. I cannot come up with it, you know. I cannot like draw the anatomy of a human, but I can trace it basically, of course. So that was something that I was used to from growing up with these techniques, you know. So basically, like with this improvisation, the film continued. Like I wanted to go there, not knowing how this is going to end, because I wanted to see what's going to happen, you know.
Yeah, but again, the limitation you see that you couldn't draw exactly what you wanted, to me, is the aesthetic. It's just a really charming aesthetic that that the animation looks so cool because, we discussed this once before, is that, you know, the super clean, super accurate digital animations we see nowadays, we see all the time now. So something imperfectly engaging is better, or at least refreshing.
Exactly. And it kind of came back to, like, the stuff that I was drawing as a child.
Yeah, I mean, you start, so I mean, I don't think, like, it gives anything away to say that there's did you recreate that child's picture book, or did you actually find one that
I
you made?
I completely recreated the child picture book. Like, there is one exactly like this, but it's telling a complete different story, or not complete different story, but it's telling Noah's Ark. And I made it for my mother, and she still kept it. But I took the design that I made of, like, the original one when I was 5 years old, and then I recreated it with my wrong hand. So really, like, trying to, like, remix my own style that I had as a child. And same was, like, this 8-bit sequence, for example. Like, this game, it was something that I did, like, when I started in the agency, you know. People were doing, like, these little flash animation 8-bit games that we were doing. So I knew, like, all these walk cycles. I knew how to do this. And instead of shooting a scene in an office now, which I could do, of course, obviously, but it's like I would have to do it now, you know, like I couldn't produce it myself. So I came up with, like, doing all these office sequences in exactly this style, you know, just like creating them in 320 times 180 pixels and then animating this, you know. And like this all felt like really going back to my childhood and coming back to the creativity that I had when I was growing up, you know.
Exactly, because it is a creative journey. The whole film's a creative journey.
Yeah.
And it comes together for me that as an art director, that's why all these sequences you're describing, whether it's the animation or the child's flipbook or the game animation, as an art designer, I mean, this is why your film looks so great. And by the way, when you told me that you brought two DP friends along with you, that explains why the photography is so good.
Because thank you.
There's times when I watch the film and I've said to myself, okay, if he's just putting a tiny camera on a tripod.
They're not on the journey, you know?
Yeah.
They're just in Thailand, in specific shots. In the beginning, like, everything that's set in the apartment, we did with like the crew, because of course it's at night, so you need to light it. It has to look like a certain way. It also should, like, because there's like all these different styles that basically, like, the aesthetic that I was choosing was like really lo-fi. So I needed something to counterbalance. And this was the stuff we were basically shooting on an Alexa, you know, just to have like really a cinema picture.
Yeah. Yeah, and it does really set that
journey itself. You know, I was just like really, because I had like this perfect beginning, basically, of like everything shot on like a small dolly. I was trying to like counterbalance this fact that I didn't have a DOP and that I was shooting everything with a tripod of myself. So,
You did do that in Thailand, because there's some shots where there's like a slow push in or something, and I'm like, how did he do that?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly, like, again, like, coming up with the, like, there is the limitation of I can only shoot myself. I know at least I can put, like, a little bit of camera shake in post or a little bit of push in, for example, you know?
Right, because you're so skilled at post, you can do that stuff.
This is really a cheap picture that I didn't light and that no one was shooting. So I didn't have the budget. I didn't have friends that were helping me at that point, at least. But I could cover it with this, like, things that I learned back in post-production, you know?
Yeah, amazing. Well, you fooled me. You made me think there was a crew throughout.
Yeah, thank you very much. That was the intention.
It works. It works. It works wonderfully. And then, and so I guess in the story, I kind of sidetracked you, but in your story of how this all came together, so you went to Thailand. And I guess I know I guess what I want to ask is when did the themes that you were dealing with, was there a moment where you decided, you know, to bring in doubt as a character and sort of tie things together?
Oh, it actually has something to do with like this whole DOP thing, you know, because like doubt came at a point where it was like really like, as I was saying, I didn't know how to continue this film. I didn't even know how to end it. Like, this was really all an experiment. I was hoping for something totally else to develop, and none of this was happening, which is basically, like, the only scene I could shoot with my friends was the one that says, like, I'm on vacation, leave me alone, which was the only thing he agreed to shoot with me, you know, and in only under the condition that I was censoring him. And, like, this condition, again, like, made another idea for the film, as you can see. But coming back to the point, I was standing on this rooftop again, like without lights, without anything but a camera, and trying to shoot a scene with, before like leaving this amazing rooftop, because I had the feeling like I should shoot a scene here. Sorry, that's really a tongue breaker for me. I should shoot a scene here. But I didn't know how to do it because, like, I was alone. So what could I create here except for, like, a scene with myself? And I found, like, that concept quite cheesy to just, like, split the picture and
have just, you like, be two roles. So, yeah.
Exactly. Like, have myself there with the white and the black shirt or something, you know, that would be totally cheesy for something, you know? And so I was starting to doubt this entire process and, like, what to do. And, like, this is, like, this is never going to lead anywhere, you know? Like, what am I doing?
Uh-oh, you dropped out for a second there.
Sorry, you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
So I was like starting to really doubt this entire process of what I was doing there, you know, like I'm trying to shoot a film with myself. Like it's never going to happen. And it's never going to look as professional as I was used to. Especially like this night scene was like shot at 12,000 ASA or something. So it was like grainy as fuck, you know, like I was not really happy with the situation that I was in. And suddenly I realized like this is the topic that basically was missing from the entire film before, because like I had this beginning, I had this entire doubt and this question that I was asking, but I didn't really know what was like the dark valley, like the dark night of the soul that it should enter, you know, what was like the moment in each dramaturgy, in each screenplay when like things really get fucked up, you know. And suddenly I realized, like, I'm really in this moment, and the counterpart that is missing and that I'm dealing with here, that I'm talking with the entire time in my mind, is doubt. Like, I'm doubting myself the entire time, and I'm doubting, like, all of these processes while this could be really a very nice topic. And suddenly, like, I did act this scene with myself, like, playing these two parts, but I came up with the idea of just, like, destroying the shape of my own body, and then like this character basically of doubt developed from this, you know, by just like making a torso without a head. And then like I was traveling along, I was working on this cartoon, and then an 11-year-old child went to me and said, like, what are you working on? And I was saying, like, oh, this is this character, this is like the doubt that I have. And she was like, oh, he has a face there, you know, like, don't you see it? And I was like, he's not supposed to have a face. Like, yeah, but it's obviously there. Like, don't you see it? And she was like drawing it again for me and like continuing to develop this character for me. So I suddenly realized, okay, this is a really interesting topic, you know, if even like an 11-year-old child can recognize this person that I just like drew. Are you still there?
Oh yeah, you dropped out after you mentioned I did hear you say that the young girl could be inspired.
Okay, then let me just pick up. So I met this. I was drawing this cartoon, and I met this young kid, this 11-year-old girl or something. And she looked at what I was doing. I was explaining to her that it was like supposed to be a representation of my own doubt and of my fears. And she was like saying, oh yeah, I recognize it. And then like, do you see, like, here's the eyes and here's the mouth. And I was like, I never drew any mouth or eyes, you know, I was just like scribbling. But she was like, yeah, but look, it's obviously there, you know. And then she was like starting to sit next to me and like recreating this character and basically like making character art of this again, you know, and telling me like how this anatomy is working. So it was like really amazing to see like how this idea was like picked up from the very first moment, even like from children around me, you know, like, and I realized it's something, especially like for an artist, you can understand this emotion and this thing that is in there, you know? So again, like from just like improvising from a situation that like seems like you cannot solve it anyhow, came a very interesting idea, you know, that like, by now I'm developing a feature film on, basically.
Yeah. But I mean, so on the rooftop, in that moment, you did improvise the idea of just, at that point, you recorded yourself with the space where you would put something animated.
Yeah, exactly.
And then later on, it also was a bit improvised what it would look like.
No, I was like recording myself twice, like once acting like this one character, you know, to really have like the movement, just like.
Oh, you did record both of you.
Yeah, yeah. I recorded.
And then you just didn't use the take where you wore the black shirt.
Exactly. Like for the black shirt, I just like scribbled on top of it, basically, and then removed the picture again, you know. And by this, like, it's just like this character state that basically is like human in certain motions, you know, but just like really connecting this kind of like creative children's mind of expressing something, like the really expressive form of destructiveness that is like very naive in the way that it's executed. And yeah, the scene itself, you know.
It's very funny because often the kiss of death for an independent film is people saying, well, we can fix that in post because, you know, independent films have no money for post. But because you had developed all these post-production skills, you were able to really make this film in post, huh?
Oh, yeah, basically.
It's wonderful.
Like, I knew the problems that you would run into in post, let's say, like this, you know? I know what things would take, like, forever to finish. And this is, for example, why the cartoon inside the film is, like, it's written in the film, like I tried to write in the film that it can only be a layout because this way I could finish it in, I think, 4 weeks instead of taking 2 or 3 months doing it and really like taking the budget in the end. So I try to like always like find the best way of telling the story and then like finding the cheapest way of executing it in the simplest way. And then make it work just like by telling the story, you know, and like this way I was kind of like, I was writing the story basically once I was in Bangkok by doing the voiceovers again and again, and always like trying to edit something on the voiceover and, or making an animation and then like either throwing it away or keeping it in the film.
Excellent. So in the end, I guess this is a less inspiring question, but how long were you actually shooting for? Or was it the entire 4 months trip?
Yeah, I think I was like almost the entire, I think 3.5 months or 3 months I was shooting. 2 weeks in the end, I was like editing the really last bits out of it, you know, because there was so much left to do after like shooting all of this, you know, and like just like layouting all these ideas. Because I wanted to shoot it to show it to my one friend before he leaves. And then I think 2 weeks or something, I went on vacation.
So you did enjoy your holiday for the last 2 weeks?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So the last 2 weeks you had a holiday, and then you flew back to Hamburg?
Yes. Basically, then I went back to Hamburg.
And then
I actually changed my apartment after I went back to Hamburg. Like, it was very funny. It's the next chapter of the film and like the reality that went afterwards. But I was basically like changing my entire life as well in Hamburg after that, you know.
Hey, really, you were changed after this, after those four months.
Definitely. Like, I had rediscovered my creativity, you know what I mean?
maybe that's another reason why the film resonates so much with people, because, I mean, isn't recapturing the creativity of our youth, that's such a common, I think that, I don't mean to use the word common, but it's such a universal theme and feeling.
Yeah, and I think something that we experience so rarely, you know, because, like, usually it's frowned upon to just like act like a child, you know? And of course it doesn't mean like behaving shitty. It's just like something like collecting shells on the beach. Like what I did in the film. And like, this is one of the other scenes that was just like, it happened basically, you know, it's going to be adapted now into something that makes a little bit more sense. But at the moment when I was there, I was basically doing sound recordings on the beach. And then finding like all of these shells on the ground, and I started collecting them, and then I realized that they all have like it all looks like chaos in front of me, but there's like all of these tiny round things, and they all have a spiral, and they all look the same, and it's amazing like how much order there is. And then I had this epiphany, and I was like, I have to shoot this. Like, how can I shoot this? But I didn't have a tripod, and I had no way of making this even remotely look like someone had shot it, you know, and it was like intended to be in a film like this. But I could do the photographs. And by doing the photographs, I came up with this idea of how to present this and how to like focus on the spiral for the scene, you know, and basically like finding a new way of visualizing it.
And it worked. It just works. I actually came up with a more practical question for you, so after you got back to Hamburg, did you spend quite a bit of time in post with this, with Dream Life?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think we spent like almost, like until it was released, we spent almost a year.
Almost a year.
Yeah, and I think it was like the problem was like there was all this music and all these sound effects that were done but not legal yet, you know. So I had to redo like most of the film, you know, and we had another film for the credits in the end, and we had like to try to clear the rights with the band, and we tried it, but we didn't get it through with the label, so we needed to take another song. All of these things. Happened that like I didn't see when I was doing the film, because while I was doing the film I could do everything myself, so I knew when it was going to be finished. But suddenly I'm not the best musician, even though I tried for the film. I think like the result that German Wahnsinn did there is much better, because they combined the sound design and the music in such a nice way, which is exactly like the idea that we had, like the idea that I did for the visuals, basically they did again for the entire sound design. So this is why like Doubt sounds this creepy, crazy, because we spent like a day just like thinking about it, you know, like how is this person going to sound? What is like the effect we're going to achieve there, you know?
Yeah, that is a great sound. I love Doubt's voice. So you spent it took a year to finally get it complete. And then you hit the festival circuit with it.
Yeah.
And I was lucky enough to come across it, and I really will always be grateful. And I always like to share this compliment with filmmakers.
Oh,
that
thank you so much.
Your film is one of those films that I started watching, and probably about 5 minutes in, I said, hold on, this is so great, I'm going to start over from the beginning and watch it on a bigger screen with my girlfriend watching it too, so we could talk about it. Because there's nothing worse when you're a film festival programmer than you watch a great film and you have no one to discuss it with.
Yeah.
So yours, I could tell just a few minutes in, I was like, and I can tell you, she's very picky, and it was, I don't know at what point, but there was some point watching Dream Life where she said, this guy's brilliant. So here you go. You have your filmmaking has two very big fans in Los Angeles.
Thank you so much.
But more than that.
I don't know what to say.
Well, so the next thing is, so, and you, I assume you had a nice festival run, and And then you did, you
yeah, it was
always
amazing.
Did have the
it
intention.
It was really great to see the feedback.
Yeah. Did you always have the intention of making a feature even with this, or was this really just stretching your creative legs and the idea of making a
feature? It was basically like the idea before was like to make, like in the beginning it says this was supposed to be the greatest travel documentary ever.
Yeah.
And I went in there with this idea of this must become like a feature length film, you know? So I realized after a while it's I can handle like the length of a Simpsons episode, and it's easier to see like if I should really make a film out of this. There was like always the idea of making a feature film. That was basically one of the problems about why I ran into this creative crisis of not knowing what this first feature film of mine would be, because like I said, there was like all these concepts that I had that I was writing that I was 99% in, but nothing where I was just like this much on fire as with some of the music videos that I was doing, you know?
Yeah. So what point did you, I spoiler alert that you are developing it into a feature and you actually made some really good progress with that. So how did that develop?
Oh, it's kind of like, how did it develop? I don't know. Like it's basically the story of the film. Like it all started when a friend of mine, Fatih Akin, said to me that make a film, you know, like you should shoot something narrative because else you will get stuck like in advertisement. And this is kind of like how I came up with this idea in the end. And so he was naturally the first person that I would show this to and say like, I have an idea for a feature film. And of course I was writing, like I was already like developing the screenplay, like on the go while I was basically doing Dream Life. And coming up with like all the ideas and everything that I would put in a longer version of this.
Oh, so as you were creating Dream Life, you're almost creating two things at once. You're creating Dream Life, the short, and then you were saving ideas for Dream Life, the feature.
Basically, like let's call it research. I mean, like the film is a little bit like based on reality and the experiences on reality that happened on this journey. It was supposed to be a travel film, but like written before, so it's like working in a narrative way.
Great, great. And you got enough positive feedback from this, you ended up, now you're working with a production company, you told me?
Yeah, basically. Like, he liked the film. He's going, he supported me at least, like, in getting the funding to really write it. And I think that's really amazing. I'm very thankful to him and the production company to accompany me so far. And I'm currently writing like the 2-hour version of this, which is a challenge because, of course, like
drafts,
as you can
right?
imagine. Yeah, I've done a lot of drafts by now, of course. Like, I mean, I think the bigger problem is like I'm actually starting to really write the screenplay now. But like getting from this initial idea, because it was like very, very documentary, very like almost autobiographic in a way, to get from this to something that works narratively over 2 hours as a cinematic movie, you know, because on the one hand, it really lives from all of this improvisation. But on the other hand, this... like for everyone who has seen it, this kind of stream of consciousness narration, you will not be able to bear it for 2 hours, you know? So it really took a long while to really develop the story and coming up with like from all these ideas that initially were there into how is this really working as a narrative film while still incorporating like all of these ideas of the animation, but giving them a real narrative purpose in this, you know?
Yeah, well,
it's not as easy anymore as just to say like, okay, I'm thinking about that, and
you can do stream of consciousness and improvisation with a 22-minute short, but yeah, if you're going to ask an audience to give you an hour and a half to 2 hours of their lives, you can't wing it.
obviously. Exactly. And it shouldn't be like, at least like if I put that much effort into it, I shouldn't start it with like, I don't really know how it's going to end, you know? So all of this is like, it's a really interesting process, you know, like, because I'm really developing this my own style of writing and being like accompanied by other writers, but also still with this freedom that I kind of got through Dream Life to understand that there's a lot of good things in the improvisation that I have, you know, and I shouldn't like listen to the rules the entire time, you know, I should, sometimes it's good just to let things flow or like go to the places again that you're writing about and just like go in there and experience it yourself, you know, and then like draw from there, you know, like come up with like different stories just from your own experiences again.
I was actually kind of also meant to ask, like, when did you decide to make English the primary language of your short? Or was that from the beginning?
Oh, that's another funny question. No, the film was like, there was actually a bilingual, like there's two versions, a German and an English one, at least in the edit. Like all the animations, they're also in German. But then I had Achim, like the guy who did the narration for the first part, you know? And he is German and half Australian, but he's only doing like English narration all the time. He never did a German narration. And at the beginning when we were casting him, he did like a test in German, which was really nice. And I wanted him because he's really good for the English language, but also able to speak the same things in German. But then when we were doing this, he was telling me like, listen, I thought about this and there's like better people than me in German. I don't want to do this because I'm really good to speak it in English, but I will not like do it in German again. I don't want this. And so we were only able to record this one session with him instead of two. And then in the end of the day, realized like it was okay because like we were only able to get like one language session into one day because I had to record like rest of 15 minutes or something of the film, you know. And it doesn't sound like it, but the film is like really tightly paced, you know, because it had like I did it all before and I did it all in the editing software. So it was like as fast as I could speak it in the first place. So the minute that we were like correcting something in English and the sentence got just like one word longer, it didn't fit anymore. So I had this experienced man and voice actor basically sitting there, and he was like, and I was speeding him the entire time to just like really match this like a rap, you know, just like getting to really the pace that we had before to match all the animations and stuff.
Yeah, because the pacing is very tight. So I can imagine. And now you're making me visualize it. And it's true. It's almost all voiceover, isn't it? There's no actual. There's a little bit of speaking.
No, there's. Yeah, there's actually one word spoken in the entire film. And we dubbed it.
And that was the girl on the beach? When the guy hands her the phone or the package?
Yeah, basically. Basically, that's like the only Thai yeah. dialogue that we
so
have.
you were free hello. To put this in 20 languages if you had the time.
Yeah, because it was all animation. That was the nice thing, you know. Like, only change the voiceover and it's working.
Well, that's I'm grateful that you did an English version. Was that because there's just such a large market for English films, and it was a better route than subtitling?
Yeah, I mean, first, like, of course, in the end, this is going to be viewed in the internet, and I know that, like, I'm going to, like, even in my circle of friends, I'm going to, like, reach more people in the English language than with the German thing, and I can always do, like, German subtitles, you know? So, and also, basically, I wrote it in English, I think, like, the narration, when I started it, basically the script, like not the script, but the voiceover script at least, was English. And then I started like to translate it to German again.
Wow. Well, that's cool. That's cool. That's good to know. All right. Well, is there anything I didn't cover that you were thinking you wanted to share?
Oh, yeah. Oh, we didn't really get to the original question, which was like the feature film, is it also going to be in English? Because it's going to be a German film, and we are going to speak German in the film for a large part, and it's also going to be like the main actors are going to be German. But I'm going to go back to like having this this concept of the bilingual narrator, basically, so that we can switch for different language versions, and I can still do like both versions. And also they're going to meet like people that they have to speak English to. So basically it's going to be like a German attempt to speak English. You know what I mean?
And that was David Oftenbrinke, the writer, director, animator, cinematographer, pretty much everything involved in the short film Dream Life was made by David. And if you want to see this amazing short film that I highly recommend, just go to Amazon Prime Video, search for Discover Indie Film, and it is in episode 2 of season 3. I guess I should have said season 3, episode 2. You know, when I listen back on that, it's awkward. I think it's awkward because whether it was Skype or FaceTime or whatever system we use to communicate, I think there was a delay. And I think our frustration with that delay of hearing each other caused some awkwardness here and there. What are you going to do? Okay, I'll stop making excuses and just move on. Film Invasion Los Angeles, that's the film festival program that we had the honor of showing Dream Life and giving Dream Life some awards. You can learn more about that festival if you go to filminvasionla.com or at filminvasionla on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. And I also program the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. So for that, you just go to shermanoaksff.com or at shermanoaksff on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. All right, my thanks to David again. And seriously, go watch Dream Life. And if you want to be really nice, just go ahead and be the kind of person who gives it 5 stars on Amazon and give this podcast 5 stars somewhere, right? Why don't you be nice? Give it a 5-star review. Be nice. All right. Thanks for listening.